Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a wee bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Hi.
Dan.
Jordan.
What's your favorite Brendan Fraser movie?
The Mummy? I don't know. Monkey Bone? Was he in Monkey Bone?
He was in Monkey Bone.
A
movie that famously ruined a man's career, and that man's name
more
is
than one. Chris
Brendan
Kattan?
Fraser. Oh, yeah. Well, look, Kattan ruined his own career the moment he discovered coke. So.
I think that almost ruined an entire studio, too.
Yeah.
Like, it was super expensive to make.
Yeah.
I worked at a movie theater when that came out, and it was one of the best things ever because it was billed as, like, all the posters said, from the director of Nightmare Before Christmas, so everybody thought it was Tim Burton.
Except it's not Tim. He produced Nightmare Before Christmas. That's right. No, it ruined the director's career
Sure. Because everybody felt betrayed when it wasn't a Tim Burton movie, and it sucked.
Yeah.
Like, everybody who came into the theater, like, opening night to see Monkey Bone, they were like, oh, I'm real excited about for this Tim Burton. I got bad news for you, man. Sorry, he didn't do this.
What's really unfortunate is it didn't make people remember how good the director did for Nightmare Before Christmas.
Well, you got a good producer on board.
Oh, come on now. We're not going to start giving producers all kinds of credit for...
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, that was a fond memory of mine working at the movie theater.
Watching the disappointment on everybody. You are...
Because it was so many people. It was something like, I worked at that movie theater for like 5 years, and I never saw anything like that again. Like, universal, like, anger coming out of the theater. Like, people just like, what the fuck?
Were you there for The Phantom Menace?
I might have not been working at the theater at the time when that came. No, I was there for a very short period of time. There was some trouble. Everybody at the theater got fired. It's complicated. My history with that movie theater is a huge mess.
I believe you were fired twice and rehired twice at least?
And I quit once.
And you quit once.
Yep, and then ended up managing the theater. So weird.
Oh, capitalism.
So weird.
You're great.
Yeah, but I think that people were more disappointed by Monkey Bone.
Yeah.
I think so, in my experience.
I can respect that. Yep. I don't remember hating...
But also...
Yeah.
Sorry.
My favorite Brendan Fraser movie is... I actually watched The Mummy, like...
By me.
3 hours ago.
Good movie.
It's fantastic.
I would say that the reason that I think people were more disappointed by Monkey Bone was... I expected people to be disappointed by Phantom Menace.
Right.
Like, the expectation was too high.
It was too high.
No matter what, even if it's fine, people are going to be disappointed.
Right.
That nerd anger is going to come out.
Right.
So it doesn't surprise me, whereas everybody mad at Monkey Bone, I mean, it's a bad movie. You knew that going in.
Right. Of course.
But that just, oh, God, the visceral rage. I loved it.
I don't think I've ever seen it. I kind of want to watch it.
The inverse of that was like on opening night for Rollerball. You remember that movie with LL Cool J?
I do remember that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody liked that?
A big group of people did. And like no one ever came to our theater dressed up, really. Ever.
Okay.
But
they did for Rollerball?
Except for maybe like Harry Potter. There were a couple people who would dress up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, for Rollerball, this big group of people came all dressed up as Rollerballers.
I want to know more about them.
Me too.
Who gives a shit about that movie?
They were so cool.
They should have their own movie.
They were having a great night, and I remember that as like sort of the reverse of the Monkey Bone thing. It's like the exuberance of these people.
Holy shit. If we could go back in time, I would make a documentary called Rollerballers, and it's just about those people who dress up to see a movie in Missouri.
At the second rate movie theater in town. Like, we were the junior varsity theaters.
Yeah.
God, I loved it. Anyway, Jordan, this is a show where I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And I only know what you tell me about
Alex correct.
Jones.
Jordan, today we've got a very interesting 2009 episode to go over. It's going to be a mess.
Yes.
I've warned you ahead of time.
Teased it mercilessly.
I don't feel like I haven't teased. I've been trying to warn and sort of qualify things, and I'll do a little bit more of that after we do something I'd rather do.
Which
is thank some of our new donors.
Great transition.
Thank you very much. So first today, I'd like to say thank you to Stephanie. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Next, Morgan. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Morgan.
Oh, thank you very much for trapping Merlin.
Oh, okay.
Morgan. Okay. Morgan Le Fay.
What did this person do?
Let's find out.
Thank you so much, Mr. Puttyfoot. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
What?
Mr. Puttyfoot is actually from an ancient Sumerian myth.
Oh, is
that
right?
So Enki and Gilgamesh both had to fight Mr. Puttyfoot.
Okay, that makes sense.
Everybody knows that.
Next, John S. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, John.
Next, and finally, I don't know how to pronounce this. It's We Are Chosen, but with an X instead of the O, so it's We Are Chicks.
That's trouble.
Like that. Yeah. But anyway, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm being
No! Technical difficulties!
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, if you would like to support the show, you can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking that button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
Oh, yes, please.
So, Jordan, today what we're doing is we're going over the span of April 7th to 8th, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to tell you off the bat, we're going to go ahead and skip ahead through the 7th because it is whack.
Okay.
It's a boring show.
Okay.
I told you about this. The 2009, it hit a bit of a snag. And
yes.
That's kind of what I'm talking about. January 7th is a mess. He just talks to Mike Rivero about a bunch of bullshit, and then he interviews the lady whose son was the guy who got decapitated on the Greyhound bus. And it's a gross...
That is exploitative to a level I don't even want to think about.
Well, she was making the rounds doing some advocacy and stuff like that.
Okay.
And so she's not being exploited, but there is still a piece of it where Alex... It's a gross interview, and it doesn't seem to fit in with anything that Alex talks about. Or
uh-huh.
It's a very... novel piece of his
right
stuff. Because he's not trying to make this guy out to be like an immigrant killer. He's not trying to, there's none of the normal rhetoric except for stuff about like demonizing mental illness and people who are on meds and
well
stuff
you
like
gotta
that.
Do that.
So there's a little bit of that, but it's definitely not worth going into, so we're just gonna skip through that and jump in on the 8th, because I think the 8th is one of the most important days that we will have ever covered in terms of our entire podcast up till this point. And before we explain why, here are a couple out-of-context drops from today's show. In the first one, Alex kind of describes my life.
Imagine having homework that never ends that you have a passion for because you want knowledge and to beat them. It's just, it's like you can't stop. You can't stop researching. You can't stop learning. You can't stop finding out what's disinfo and what's real.
I think that when I heard that, I was like, I can't relate more to that, except all you do is lie.
Dan, the more you look into the abyss, the more the abyss looks back at you, and it has your own face on it, Dan.
Yeah, it's a little bit.
Oh, boy.
So in this next,
that's dangerous.
This next out of context drop, Alex Jones asks a rhetorical question that he doesn't want an answer to.
I mean, do you people have any respect for me?
No.
Do you have any respect for me?
No.
Or is it just all we don't believe Alex?
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you nailed it.
He's in a weird mood on the 8th.
I don't know. That's a weird thing to have on your own radio show, is to just ask a giant, like, does anybody like me here? Really? Anybody? Anybody here at all? No?
Yeah. Well, see, that was in response to, that whole jag was sort of in the response to a caller who calls in.
Mm-hmm.
Alex goes into overdrive on this episode and does a whole extra hour of mm-hmm. the show. So it's a 5-hour episode, which
is
brutal.
Oh, boy.
But in the extra hour of the show, he starts, he explains that he wants to do overdrive because he's got too many calls backed up and he wants to talk to the people. So the first call that he takes is a guy who's like, hey, Alex, this entire episode, you've been talking about this news article in the AP about how Obama is admitting that they're doing chemtrails. But if you go look at that article, it doesn't say that. I like you and I want to help get your message out to my friends and stuff like that. But you were literally saying something that isn't true. So if I tell them to go check this out, they're going to see it and be like, that's not true. That's hurting the cause or whatever. And then Alex just gets so fucking defensive and screams at him for a half an hour.
Yeah.
And so that leads to the, does anybody respect me? It's like, wow, this is why you went to overdrive.
That is rough. The idea that, oh man, that's so sad.
Yeah.
That's so sad that a guy who looks up to Alex, who's like, you're a great man. You're doing great things. I don't want to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
I love you. And out of that love, I tell you that you are lying about this bullshit. Change it. That way, when you tell the truth, I can tell more of my friends and they'll tell more of their friends and they'll point it back and they'll have hard evidence that you're right.
Yep.
And instead, he throws a tantrum like a little baby?
Basically, yes.
I understand that.
It's wild.
That makes sense.
If there were not the rest of this episode, I would like to just listen to that whole 20 minutes. Because Alex just disassembles on air, more or less. Just like, why?
Yeah.
I'm right all the time. It's awesome.
All right, so he turns into a raving lunatic.
It is awesome, but... Jordan, today this episode is going to be very big. It's going to be very important, and you'll see immediately why. But before we jump into anything, I need to make one very important caveat before we get into any of the main substance of today's episode.
We've got a lot of new donors. Go ahead and read those off, Dan.
That's not it.
Oh, that's not? Well, no, okay, I'm sorry.
There are going to be parts of this episode that I can tell you what's going on. Uh-huh. And then there are going to be other parts where there's some conjecture and some speculation. I want to give that warning ahead of time, and we will do our best to call out what is what. But I don't want to mislead anybody who's listening to this as we go through it to think that we have a firm conclusion that we can come to, or that we're directly saying X means X.
Right.
But we do mean X means X, but X means Y. We're not trying.
Right.
We're not. I don't know how to say this other than to say.
How about let me say it to you this way.
Okay.
And let's do it in the parlance of Alex Jones. Parlance, of course, is a word that Alex Jones uses.
In the nomenclature of the parlance
exactly.
Of the symbolism.
Our gut will point us to this thing.
And even beyond gut, circumstantial.
But we do not always trust our gut.
No.
Unlike Alex, we will say our gut says this is probably true, but we don't trust that because we can't prove it.
There's gut, there's circumstantial evidence, there's coincidence and all those things together. And we can discuss how those things lead us towards a conclusion.
Right.
But we can't say with any certainty that this is the conclusion.
Exactly.
I want that caveat to be totally clear lest anyone get the wrong idea, because a lot of this stuff is pretty important to the stuff we cover and at the same time really fucking suspicious.
Yeah.
So here's where we start. We're going to jump in about 20 minutes into the April 8th, 2009 episode. And the reason we're not going to listen to anything at the beginning is because it's just a continuation of Alex's very consistent. I don't want to be blamed for that Pittsburgh shooting.
Right.
He's very defensive about the idea that newspapers are pointing out that the guy who did the shooting was a regular commenter on his website.
He's going
on and on about how like, yeah, but you look at the comments, he doesn't like me. And that sort of thing.
Ooh.
And that's sort of his defense.
Hard proof.
Well, I mean, you can see how there is an argument he can make. It's a bad one because he does like Alex. He just doesn't think he hates the Jews enough.
Right.
That's what the guy's complaints were, which is not necessarily indications that this guy was against Alex, but.
Oh, that's such a weird criteria. Dan, I would love to be friends with you. I think you're a great guy. I think you're right on most of the time, but you just don't hate Jews enough, so we can't hang out. I'm sorry.
Cool.
I'm sorry.
I would be fine with that. You don't think I hate Jews enough? You don't want to hang out with me? That's a win-win for me.
That's true. That is a win-win.
Yeah. So that's most of the beginning of the episode. And then about 25 minutes in, Alex says something that made me ears perk up.
The left, I mean, I'm being directly attacked by George Soros right now. You know that's who runs Media Matters. Literally runs it. And all these other big sites that he publicly funds are attacking me. Let me tell you something, folks. It's creepy to have the eye of Sauron on you. I mean, you think it's fun having hardcore people like George Soros after you?
So, we now have Alex saying not only that he's being attacked and associated with this Pittsburgh shooting, and he doesn't want that. That's not me.
I told people to kill people, but that doesn't mean they kill people because I told them to.
But beyond that, he's adding in Soros to that narrative, which is something that we have never seen before. On April 2nd of 2009, Alex brought up Media Matters, and he said that it was run by David Brock. Doesn't mention Soros at all.
Right.
This is a new piece of rhetoric being introduced here. George Soros runs Media Matters.
And this is
and
April
8th. George Soros is attacking me.
April 8th, 2009.
Yep. Mere days after Alex Jones talked about Media Matters
with
being
no
run by David
of,
Brock, no mention of George Soros.
Up until this point, we've had caller.
Maybe three mentions of him.
A caller said something about
Webster
Soros.
Tarpley brings him up
and
in
he's
the Obama
like, oh,
deception.
Yeah, of course. Soros is my.
Alex has been very not into talking about Soros so far.
So what could have changed, Dan?
Well, I'm not sure. And I think that's an exploration that will drive this episode, quite frankly. But I should say, though, too, I think it's important to point out that, like, if it was just that, if it was just Alex being like, eh, you know, Soros is being a dick to me or something like that, I don't think that I would be all that interested in necessarily covering it. Or at least I wouldn't bring this much to the proceedings. But unfortunately, Alex spends pretty much the entire show taking swings at George Soros.
Okay.
In a way that I would describe as overkill. Like, it's insane. Here is another clip of
him. You mean he's in overdrive?
Mm-hmm. And in this next clip, Alex predicts that he is about to become super famous, and he's going to blow up, and that George Soros is trying to destroy him.
See, I've been holding back being explosively huge, and I realize now I'm not going to be able to do that. And now I have to face my fear, because that's the final fear. I now enter the phase of maximum danger. A lot of you wanting to see them crush me, you're probably going to get to see it now.
So he doesn't mention Soros by name in that clip, but that's the external context of what he was talking about before the beep, beep, beep music started. So Alex has some indication that he is about to become very popular and much more. He's going to see a rise in his stature.
A really confident, concrete statement that does not sound like our usual boasts and brags. He doesn't begin it with, and I don't mean to brag, I've been holding back, or I don't mean to act like I'm some kind of super strong guy and I've been holding back my popularity.
Yeah.
He says, I'm about to become super famous.
Right.
On the same episode where he pivots to saying that George Soros hates him.
I mean, that's
specifically.
It's coincidence.
That is a coincidence.
I think that in the past, whenever we've seen Alex do like a lot of brags about his place in life and his position, it's always a present day brag. It's always a, I am this, not I'm about to because I'm stopping holding back.
Yeah, whatever.
And if what he was holding back was this knowledge about George Soros, I think that he would clearly say that on the episode, and he doesn't.
No.
He doesn't say what he's been holding back is revealing that Soros is a big bad guy, which probably would cut off most of my criticisms at the path. Like, at the past.
Yeah.
Because then it would be like, oh, that's the way you're presenting this. I don't believe you, but at least you're making that apparently.
Yeah.
He's just injecting Soros into everything now. Mm-hmm. And he's doing it in such a way that it really just feels unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a jarring shift, like in a completely different direction, because we've been spending months and months listening to his walk through the 2009, and
right.
He never talks about Soros. He has his own villains that he's mm-hmm. super interested in talking
Rockefellers,
about.
Yeah.
Rothschilds, the Ford Foundation.
Yeah.
You know,
any famous Jews.
And this is so much of a departure. It's so much. And we're not nearly done. Like,
quick question. Do we have any concrete, kind of like range where the Soros being the big baddie.
We're going to get into all of that. And that is why, trust me, I appreciate your question, but throughout the course of this,
I'm really trying to make this a quick episode. I'm trying to get it
in and out.
I'm trying to get my conclusions in, questions answered. Everybody go home. We'll have a good night.
It's a little more complicated than being able to answer it in a really, solid way, a really specific way. But I will say that when you get into the complexities of it, the simplicity of it emerges.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. That's a very zen kind
of. That is the single most annoying sentence you have ever said to me.
And it came
that,
from the heart.
That sentence is so fucking annoying. I'm going to wake up at about 3 a.m. this morning and just be like, fuck that sentence!
It was a pretty good sentence.
It was a great sentence, thank and you. I hate it. It's
so
awful.
Here's the next clip that we have of Alex sort of rewriting some of his history in order to inject Soros into it.
We just read what they said they were going to do, introduced in the UN, a tax on all carbon to control everybody, and that they would implode the economy through derivatives to bring this in. I've been saying that for 10 plus years because I was reading what George Soros was saying they were going to do. I was reading what David Rockefeller said they were going to do. I was reading IMF and World Bank documents.
So he was reading things that Soros said they were going to do for years.
And yet never mentioned him.
No, that's very weird. That's very, very strange.
Actually, what's amazing about that is that in rewriting his own history, you see the first draft.
What do you mean?
I'm just inverting your dumb fuck sentence. I'm so angry at it.
Look, the imitation is never as good as the original.
I think that's a compliment to me this time.
I guess. So if Alex is trying to say that he's been saying he's been reading Soros's writings and stuff like this for years, and that's what's led him to be able to know the things that he knows, I say, no, that's not at all the way you've presented things up till this point. Mm-hmm. This is very not in line with his own version of his life.
Especially considering the... I suppose either means he...
Well, to be fair...
Either means he started looking into Soros and then found out that all of the stuff that he has been studying so far has actually been pointing towards Soros and he didn't know about
it. But again, if he'd presented it that way, my criticisms would go away.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's a logical way to present introducing Soros into this world, which is, like, I would say if he got on air and was like, my researchers have been digging in and they found that Soros is behind X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
Then at least from a narrative standpoint, it makes sense.
Right.
But instead, he's pretending that all of these things are things that he's been talking about for every episode up till this point.
Yeah.
And it's just not. He's in media res is where he's starting these narratives, as if he's hitting the ground running.
Yeah.
And it's very, very weird. And I have to stress that, like, we're not going to listen to a lot of the stuff on the 7th, but it's not like I'm hiding it. He doesn't talk about Soros on the 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he did, then, okay, we got 2 days instead of one. But, you know, I'm just a little defensive about the idea that I'm not showing all my work here.
He did talk about Soros in 1998. He was...
I highly doubt that.
Still in high school.
I highly doubt that. So Alex now is, you know, talking about other reasons Soros doesn't like him, right?
Right.
And I think it is probably good to point this out that he's making a lot of wide-ranging statements in terms of like, oh, and I wanted to correct you just a tiny bit. So
yeah.
Like, in that last clip, you were saying that he's been reading Soros's writings forever. And that's not really implied by what he's saying. He's saying he's been reading these documents for 10 years.
Right. I apologize.
And for some stretch of time, Soros documents. Although it is kind of implied that it's been a long time.
Yeah.
But I just want to be totally clear lest we mislead.
Of course.
So it's a wide-ranging spectrum of things, whether it's this IMF documents and like financial takeovers or any of the other things that he's already thrown around. Beneath it does seem to be that the media matters part and they complain about Alex and he's trying to deflect criticism of himself. So there is that as a sort of motivation.
Right.
But it still doesn't answer the question, why is this happening now?
And absolutely.
The question becomes even more complicated when you see how far-ranging these complaints that he has about Soros are.
I can make a film that costs $100,000, and then I release it free, and in 2 weeks it's been seen more than 15 million times. It's now 3+ weeks. I haven't gone and counted it up yet. It takes hours to go around to hundreds of sites and count it up.
Seems like you've done that before. That?
You think George Soros, who spent his own hard-earned money to put Barack Obama in to pacify the left... That's all that is co-opting the left. You think he likes that?
I don't know. I don't know if he cares. I don't think he's ever spoke on it.
Who, Soros?
Yeah, I don't know if he cares about Endgame or the Obama deception.
Is that what he was saying?
He was talking about the Obama deception.
I didn't realize it because the way the sentence kind of structure made it sound like, does Soros like that he's co-opting the left, I suppose?
Mm-hmm.
Which he's actually talking about, does Soros talk about the Obama deception?
He's saying that Soros doesn't like that Alex is able to put out the documentary, The Obama Deception.
Okay.
And that's
boy.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to teach him about grammar.
It's tough, but you can understand what he's saying. So in this next clip, he makes another accusation about Soros.
The fact that Obama does have an attorney general that filed briefings before the Supreme Court for a total, complete ban of any firearms of any type, including single shot for the American people. And that they've introduced all these bills, the most draconian in history. That's real.
Definitely
and you
true.
Just can't sit over there saying it isn't real. Let me tell you something, you establishment George Soros finance people.
Does anybody
this
like
is going
to
lead to war. This is what I've been trying to stop. I like the red lights working. I like the power working. I like being able to go home and eat a hot meal. I don't have some romantic love of the coming conflict that's going to happen, the bloody civil war in this country.
So he's saying that Soros is going to precipitate a civil war by these people that he's funding. All of the people out there in the media that Alex doesn't like, yeah. All of these people who are, you know, pushing the ideas that Alex is opposed to. So he's giving Soros ownership of so much that he didn't give him ownership of before.
Not even a little bit.
This is a drastic departure point for Alex. I don't know how much he keeps this up in the episodes after this,
mm-hmm.
but this episode is a very harsh document of Alex going real fucking hard on a guy.
Yeah, this is a right angle turn.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pivot of the highest caliber.
Yep. So Alex is gonna try and contextualize the media landscape that he sees in front of him, which is there's the controlled people on the left and the controlled people on the right,
mm-hmm.
wherein like Rush Limbaugh is in charge of the right and George Soros is in charge of the left.
Oh, that's a bad dichotomy.
And then we find out about another media organization that is owned by Soros.
And so the establishment writers are going out trying to get the right-wing base under the control of Limbaugh and the left-wing base under the control of the Soros-controlled media empire. Air America and the rest of it.
Air America.
They are desperately trying to get their people back under their wings. And going, look, the right-wingers. Look, the right-wingers are going to get you. Alex Jones, he's a right-winger. Don't listen to him about the New World Order.
At this point, Lionel is working at Air America. I don't know if Soros wants to put Lionel on air, but
Soros,
I don't know.
Loves Lionel. Or at the very least the theme song. Can't get it out of his head.
So whatever. Who gives a shit? This is nonsense. But again, it's expanding the power base that his new villain has in the world. And he explicitly says in this next clip that Soros is behind the left.
Don't you understand how you get discredited, George Soros Foundation fake liberals? You know, they're there to co-opt the left.
That's a weird name for a foundation.
Same thing with Hannity and Glenn Beck and the rest of them. And see, the left has woken up to this new world order being real. So they're waking up and joining the people. And so the establishment's trying to keep their people on the reservation, on the plantation.
Okay.
I suppose the only conclusion I can draw from this is that, his writers, were right around season 3 or season 4, and they realized they had to introduce a new big bad.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, they're ramping up his power base in order to make him seem way more awful than the previous big bad.
I mean, that's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, that's possible. You know, you have a situation where, like, I don't know, the actor wants to renegotiate his salary. It's like, well,
yeah.
We need a new character here. I don't know, maybe the Rothschilds wanted to unionize the propaganda business or something. I don't know.
This is like if Robert Downey Jr. hadn't signed on for the Avengers. The whole thing could have gone crazy.
Could have.
Yeah.
So in this next clip, one of the things that we've talked about a whole bunch, even already on this episode, is the idea that Alex has his own stable of guys that he likes to point the finger at.
Right.
Rothschilds, Rockefellers, what have you. And in this next clip,
regular horses.
I believe that what we see is Alex Jones initiating Soros into that group.
What's going to happen is Mexico collapses and even more illegal aliens run up here. There's dead cops all over the place. It's going to be dead military all over the place. They're going to have them marching around trying to take people's guns in the middle of all this. As Mexico collapses, the Attorney General already came out in press conferences and said we got to restrict the Second Amendment because the guns are causing it in Mexico. And you know they're going to say take the guns as there's rioting and breakdown of society. And they're going to march the police right into hell, march the military right into hell because the American people aren't going to turn their guns in. And when there's dead cops and military everywhere, they're going to blame me for trying to stop the bankers raping us and starting this. When it's in their own IMF and World Bank documents that they want to have a war between the police and military and the people. It's George Soros and David Rockefeller and Bezygnu Brzezinski.
Bezygnu Brzezinski.
Hey,
I like that.
You know, the passion's in.
Hey. Don't get me wrong. I don't judge anybody for mispronouncing of a word every now and again, but Bezygnu, that's pretty fun.
Yeah. Well,
we should change his name.
Z's starting a name are always a little troublesome.
So you got
Rockefeller, Soros, and Brzezinski all there as the ones who want to cause this civil war that will end up with blood in the streets and people's guns being taken. Like, Soros is now high level. He is, as you know, he's up there with the elites of the globalists whereas before, he just kind of seemed like a tertiary asshole that Alex didn't seem to like.
Right.
You know, like he was just a rich guy who Alex was kind of like, nah, fuck that guy.
Fair. That's a fair criticism.
My position on how Alex has described Soros in the past, up till this point, has been, I would describe it basically as like a guy who is too frank in interviews, both about himself and about geopolitics.
Right.
And Alex takes issue with that. So like, the times that he's come up have been like when Soros was talking about how the price of oil going down is going to be bad for Russia.
Right.
It wasn't still agency that he was applying to Soros in terms of these evil plans. And on this show, he is absolutely doing that.
Yes.
So in this next clip, he makes one specific complaint about him. And I think that I can track this one down.
And so you got George Soros, who told a press conference, Globe and Mail, Associated Press.
Wasn't a press conference.
I'm having a very good crisis as Soros, as the hedge fund managers make billions off recession. And George Soros went on to say, it is the culmination of my life's work and has been very stimulating. That's a quote. Now, that's who owns and finances these major sites attacking me, including Media Matters, publicly run by Soros. And he's coming out with a vicious attack piece. Doesn't matter if the original newspaper that got fed this stuff by the Southern Poverty Law Center has, in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, has had to admit, oh my gosh, Alex Jones had the white supremacists after him. Actually, the cop killer didn't like Alex and disagree with Alex about nonviolence.
So that's the thing I was talking about earlier. He's trying to pretend that all these stories were retracted.
Yeah, and stuff like that.
But, boo. So what he's talking about here, he's pretending this is a press conference. Alex has just read the headline. This is a bad paraphrasing and quoting out of context of an interview George Soros did with The Australian in 2009. If you read the interview, he does say that the period in late 2008, early 2009 was, quote, in a way the culminating point of my life's work, so to speak. But he's not talking about causing the crisis or even about profiting off it. Just two questions prior in the interview, Soros had indicated that he doesn't spend too much of his time focusing on the minutiae of financial sectors, and at this point in his life, he's far more interested in focusing on policy. The interviewer rebuts, quote, what sort of policy? To which Soros replies, quote, the financial crisis and how to solve it. When he's saying this is a culmination of his life's work, he's talking about all the writing he'd been doing and exploring how the theory of reflexivity that he's so into could be used to help fix the financial crisis. This is absolutely 100% an instance of Alex not having read the interview or intentionally lying about it. To quote him, the quote about him having a great crisis is from the same interview. And surprise, it's also taken out of context. This was really more about how he had predicted the crash and bet accordingly. Also, he warned people of what he saw coming. So he's publicly predicted it. It wasn't like he kept the information to himself and profited off it.
Right.
Also, he had a really funny line in that interview about how the mainstream financial experts had predicted 3 out of the last 7 bubbles, but he was better because he'd predicted 7 out of the last 3, poking fun at the fact that he had wrongly predicted bubbles multiple times in the past.
Nice.
He shows a great aplomb about himself.
That's very clever.
Yeah, it's
good
very
for
nice.
Him. Yeah.
The hilarious part about this shit is that in that interview, when he's asked about solutions, he literally advocates for greater restrictions and regulations on short selling, which is one of the instruments he used to make his money. He's advocating for a solution that is opposed to his own self-interest.
Yeah.
There is nothing in this interview that is indicative of any way that he caused this crash,
yeah,
that he's enjoying the crash part of it,
mm-hmm,
outside of it being sort of, at least in some ways, evidence that the theory of reflexivity in the markets is something that people should take more seriously, which has been his life's work. In interviews I've read with him, he cops to, like, yep, I made a mistake on that one, and one of the things that goes along with that reflexivity thing is the idea of, like, if you make a mistake, change what you do. Don't be beholden to the plan that you put forth just because it was your plan.
He should coach an NFL team, you know what I'm saying? Hey, there we go.
Playoffs.
Hey, what are we doing?
Mahomes. All right. I don't know. No references on my part.
Mahomes is a great one. That's a great current reference. You nailed it.
I don't know much about who he is. My friend Kyle Ayers is from Kansas City.
Don't worry about it.
Super into him.
Yeah.
My point is that I think that when you read actual interviews with George Soros, one of the things that you see most frequently is a humility about himself, a sense of humor about his own positions and his place in the world.
And his failures.
And his failures. And being forthright about it. It doesn't He doesn't, if you actually read his words and some of the books that he's written, he doesn't fit the picture that the right-wing media puts out of him.
Of course not.
It's easy to present yourself well in interviews and still be a dick. There's plenty of examples of that through the entertainment industry.
No, who?
it's possible to do that, but I don't know. I'd need more evidence if these people want to really demonize him and have it stick.
It is kind of more advantageous to the right for him to be both forthright, self-aware, somewhat humble, and have a sense of humor about himself, in that then he becomes such an easy target to attack.
True, true.
Because you can make up anything about a guy who is humble and self-aware.
To an extent, but it's interesting that most of the stuff where he's actually copped to, like, I was wrong about that, or like, I read one interview where he was talking about how that he tried to set up a foundation in some former Soviet bloc country, and they were pushing for reform in X direction, mm-hmm. and he got pushback from the government, and they had a conversation about it, and he realized that he was going about things wrong, mm-hmm. and they adjusted the way that they were doing things, because he wasn't taking into account local customs and the more greater culture of that country. And so, like...
Wait, so he was ignorant of something and then he learned more about it and then he changed his behavior? There is nothing the right wing would hate more than that sequence of events.
It's true. But there's things like that. And you could, like, if you're a right wing propagandist, you could glom onto that and misrepresent that.
Of course.
But I'd never see that. I only see these lies. Like he intentionally crashed the British pound.
Right.
He's a Nazi collaborator.
Of course.
Stuff like that. I never see the versions that were like, well, we could have a conversation about that. You're going to lose that conversation. You're going to lose that argument.
Yeah, of course.
We could have that conversation. Yeah. You're going to lose. It'll be interesting, certainly more interesting than the pound or the Nazi one, but I don't know. It's pretty crazy. So then in this next clip, Alex talks about how he's calling for Soros' arrest. And he says something that I think was a major red flag for me.
See, I have George Soros, who's having a great time. See, he doesn't want you looking at him. See, I'm on air calling for his arrest, as many other nations are doing.
Many other nations are doing that. That's an interesting thing for Alex to say.
How many other nations?
In the time since Alex has been talking about George Soros, we constantly see him being used as a scapegoat whenever there's something happening in the world that runs counter to Russian interests.
Odd.
For instance, in 2017, Macedonia was in a little bit of a political crisis. This wasn't the whole story, obviously, but a piece of it was that Macedonia was in the process of being brought into the EU, which is bad news for Russia, because Macedonia is home to the very important Negotino Klekovechi gas pipeline.
Okay.
Which is an important part of Russia's ability to transport gas to Europe. Congressman Chris Smith and Mike Lee wrote letters to then Secretary of State Rex Tillerson about how open society was fomenting discord in Macedonia and attempting to give the left full control of their judiciary. Much of this was based on information that was being put out by a group called Stop Operation Soros. From an article in Politico, quote, the Macedonian politicians and an allied group known as Stop Operation Soros deny any direct Russian role in their efforts, but they acknowledge that Moscow has taken an interest. One of the founders of Stop Operation Soros, Kevetkin Chilimanov, noticed a virtual army of bots and trolls posting about mass demonstrations against Soros that never actually happened. Interesting. Also in 2017, Viktor Orban, Prime Minister of Hungary, began targeting Soros and blaming him for what he described as an invasion of immigrants, which were precipitating a great replacement and shifting the demographics of the country. It should be noted that Orban is not a cool dude. In a speech that he gave at the Balvanos Summer Free University and Student Camp in 2014, he literally said, quote, the new state that we are constructing in Hungary is an illiberal state, a non-liberal state. It does not reject the fundamental principles of liberalism, such as freedom, and I could list a few more, but it does not make this ideology the central element of state organization. So he's not so much...
Wait, that was at a graduation?
I don't think it was a graduation. It was like a student camp of some sort.
Wow.
This university student camp.
That is not a rah-rah speech
no.
that you want at an assembly. Listen, kids, you can do whatever you want. Not in our country, though, goddammit. We're creating a place where you can't do whatever you want. Freedom? That's great.
Fuck you.
We like freedom, but not as an absolute or a central idea.
Whoa. Let's pump the brakes on freedom.
It's a good fourth priority. So, I mean, like, I think that we can agree that without freedom being fundamental, it's not a freedom. It doesn't exist.
It's kind of against that.
Yeah. So, he's not into that, sort of freedom stuff, which puts him diametrically opposed to George Soros, who paid to open the Central European University in Budapest and paid for scholarships for promising students to go to college, which, ironically, Viktor Orban was a recipient of in 1989.
Oh, God damn it. We can't teach the evils.
Nope.
We can't teach the evils at the schools that we create.
The Aurora Center is a Jewish charity organization in Hungary, and they'd been aligned with Soros to some extent. He had given them some funding. And I'd like you to listen to this passage from an article in The Guardian and see if you hear anything you find familiar. Quote, the Aurora Center was set up in 2014 and acts as a kind of coalition of the vulnerable, housing the offices of non-governmental organizations that work on Jewish issues, Roma issues, LGBT rights, migrants, drug use, and homelessness. The proceeds from an on-site bar and regular concerts go to support the running of the space, and the center's initial funding came partially from Soros. Last month, a group of far-right activists defaced the outside of the building, spray-painting Stop Operation Soros on the pavement and plastering photographs of his face with a red cross stuck through it on the doorway, which is undoubtedly a coincidence. In 2018, Orban's government passed a law called Literally Stop Soros. It's called Stop Soros.
Not literally Stop Soros.
That would be
too much. Yeah. That would be a little bit too much for it. That would be on the nose, maybe. Yeah.
Which
it would be a great bill if it was called Figuratively Stop Soros.
These Stop Soros laws restricted non-governmental organizations from being able to assist immigrants in asylum cases. So Soros withdrew Open Society from the country. Orban later forced the Central European University out of the country, which is a U.S.-accredited university. So, cool. You see, these are pretty good indicators of the sorts of leaders who are scapegoating Soros in the more recent years. But it doesn't help our purposes here, because these two examples came after 2009, when this episode comes
exactly.
from. What we need to do is find out who, as a government, had anti-Soros positions before that point, so we can see who Alex is talking about. It should come as no surprise to anyone that the only relevant country Alex can be talking about is Russia.
Belize! Oh!
Ooh.
Ooh, no! Oh, I'm sorry.
This goes all the way back to Belmopan! From November 7th, 2003 article in the BBC. Quote, camouflage-clad men have forced staff to leave the Moscow offices of the Open Society Institute, founded by U.S. billionaire George Soros. At least 30 men stormed the offices and seized computers and documents in the raid, which began late on Thursday. The state was claiming that it was about Open Society not paying their rent, but that doesn't explain why the camouflaged men took what was described as, quote, two lorry loads of documents after their raid. That doesn't make sense.
Look, I didn't pay my rent for a while, and my landlord,
took
of
documents?
Course, hired two dozen camouflaged men
right.
to steal my computer and then rummage through
deny you access to your servers.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that was their whole plan.
What this was really about was Soros and Open Society. They were open about how the arrest of Yukos Oil CEO Mikhail Khodorkovsky, I'm not good at this.
Khodorkovsky
by Putin was a clear instance of corruption in an attempt to jail his political opponents.
No,
because Khodorkovsky was definitely one of them.
No.
He'd spent tons of money establishing educational programs, setting up journalist training initiatives, and founding internet cafes where normal people could have access to and communicate with the outside world. He was arrested and jailed on trumped-up charges, ultimately doing about 10 years in jail before international outcry led to Putin pardoning him in 2014, after which point he wisely headed out to the UK. Smart. Get out of
there. Yeah, that was a good move. That was a good move.
Soros was one of the people speaking up about this case, and in retaliation, Putin raided his offices and made it impossible for him to operate within the country. In that time period, Soros was very clear about his opposition to Putin's government, writing an op-ed for CNN in 2009 that said, quote, the new order in Moscow that has emerged out of the chaos of the 1990s is very far from an open society. It's an authoritarian regime that preserves an outward appearance of democracy, but derives its power from its control of Russia's national resources. It uses those resources to maintain itself in power, to personally enrich the rulers, and exercise influence over its neighborhood, both in Europe and the former Soviet sphere. But the ideal of an open society is difficult to suppress, and I have not given up hope. In the period following the 2003 raid, Putin continued to express his hostility towards Soros and his democratic initiatives, blaming him for many of the things that the rest of the world views as Putin's own aggression, be it the Georgian War in 2008 or the annexation of Crimea.
Soros.
Interestingly, on February 23rd, 2009, which is, I don't know, about a month before the episode we're listening to
February 23rd, 2009. Those 2 dates really seem close together.
Yeah. George Soros wrote an article for the European Council on Foreign Relations that was very overt in its message about Putin's Russia. Here are some choice passages. Quote, Europe cannot afford to resist Russia, cannot afford to not resist Russia's geopolitical aggression, and it needs to be unified to have any chance of success. Europe needs to pursue a two-pronged strategy. On the one hand, it must protect itself against the geopolitical threat posed by a newly assertive and adventurous Russia. On the other, it must seek to replace the rule of force with the rule of law, and geopolitics with the pursuit of democracy, open society, and international cooperation. Strengthening and supporting the former Soviet republics would serve both prongs of a unified EU policy towards Russia. In the op-ed, Soros advocates for the strategy of establishing a, quote, unified energy policy with a Europe-wide regulatory authority, which has precedence over, which has precedence over national regulators and a Europe-wide distribution network. This would deprive Russia of its ability to play one country against another because a concession granted to one national distributor would immediately become available to customers in all other countries.
Yeah.
Which is reflecting the reality of what Russia had done previous to this.
Oh, do you mean picking them off one by one in order to,
and also playing with their oil reserves in order to manipulate countries that relied on those sorts of things.
How long has Putin been in power for now? It's gotta be 30
December
years.
December 31st, 1999.
So
he took over on New Year's Day,
so it's almost 20 full years now.
Yep. So Soros's article for the European Council on Foreign Relations is a direct attack on Putin, both in a political and economic sense. And based on how good Russia is at propaganda, I don't see it as very likely that Putin would not want to respond with a disinformation campaign against Soros.
It
seems very much in line with the strategies that Russia uses generally in terms of information warfare.
The strategies that Russia has used for 100 and some odd years!
Right, and we have just a month before this episode that we're listening to where Alex starts talking about George Soros. George Soros himself writes an op-ed in the European Council on Foreign Relations that is advocating for a position that definitely would work against Putin's interests.
Yeah.
Like, that two-pronged strategy would be incredibly effective in terms of strengthening those vulnerable countries and depriving Russia of one of its chief tools in terms of manipulating the oil supplies to get people to turn on each other.
This is like the Bugs Bunny episode where Daffy Duck has just put up a bunch of arrows all over the entire forest. Every possible arrow everywhere pointed directly at Bugs Bunny's hole. Do you kind of see where that...
But we still can't prove Bugs Bunny's down there.
I'm not saying that Bugs Bunny's down there. I'm just saying that there are a lot of arrows pointing towards Bugs Bunny's hole.
I have a lot of thoughts, and it does bum me out that there's really no way to make this, like, any direct claim. But we can talk about the...
We
can talk about each of those arrows.
But we can
at no point say... That rabbit is fucking down.
No.
Which is a bummer.
We're gonna have to fire a gun down that hole to see who's down there and, you know, smoke them out.
So, I've already made this.
That's not how you smoke a thing out of a hole, firing a gun into it, but no. Fair enough. It is entirely reasonable to, accept that this is a coincidence. Entirely reasonable.
Possibly.
It could just be the timing matches up. That happens.
So I guess now might be a good time to talk about the answer to the question you asked earlier about old time Soros hate.
Yeah.
Because it predates any of this stuff that Russia was doing in the early 2000s in terms of demonizing the open societies. It's not just something that popped up out of nowhere.
Well, obviously it started with Hitler, so there we go.
Well, see here, here's the thing. There's a rich history of despots in Eastern Europe hating George Soros specifically, and for a good reason. He spent his life and a large fortune supporting democratizing forces in countries that those despots wish to rule over in authoritarian fashions.
In perpetuity.
There's a long line of this that predates Putin's rise to power, again, on New Year's Eve 1999, but it doesn't predate him being in the KGB. He was a foreign intelligence officer for the KGB from 1975 to 1991, reaching the rank of lieutenant colonel. You may notice that the date of him leaving the KGB is right around when the Soviet Union fell, at which point he decided to get into politics, eventually finding himself a fast-rising star in the Yeltsin administration. In 1992, István Kurska was a radical nationalist member of the Hungarian National Assembly. Though Hungary wasn't a part of the USSR, it was a country that was militarily dominated by the Soviet Union until the Iron Curtain fell. In the 50s, Czirka gained a public image as a democratic hero, having been arrested at the 1956 attempted revolution against Soviet occupation. He put on the appearance of being a democratic crusader, critical of the Hungarian regime in power, but it was later revealed in the 90s that through the entire time, he was employed as an informant for the Hungarian secret police.
Holy shit, he's literally controlled opposition!
Yeah, he was also deeply an anti-Semitic dude, insisting that the Zionists wanted to take over Hungary. In 1992, he accused Soros of being a puppet of Israel, ostensibly trying to help Zionists take over the country.
Right.
So that is it from 1992. We have this example of a fucking dude who is presenting himself as a democratizing force, but he was actually a snitch for the people he was pretending himself to be against. So you got that. Okay, that's one good example. Jan Slata was a hyper-nationalist extreme member of the National Council in then Czechoslovakia. He was a real shithead, saying things like the following about people from Hungary. Quote, "These robbers, murderers, and those who erect these ugly turuls, these Hungarian parrots." It's a, like a traditional bird, the turul, in Hungary. It's not important.
That's nice. It's nice to learn something.
He's insulting their native sort of traditions and culture.
It's like a colloquial insult. Everybody from Indiana is bleh.
Yeah. He called the ethnic Hungarian minority in the country a, quote, tumor on the body of the Slovak nation, and vowed to, quote, get into our tanks and level Budapest if they attempt to teach us the Lord's Prayer in Hungarian ever again. He called Joseph Tiso, quote, one of the greatest sons of the Slovak nation. Fun fact, Joseph Tiso was the president of the Slovak Republic back when it was a client state of Nazi Germany. By August 1942, Tiso had aided in deporting most of the Jews who lived in the Slovak Republic and was fully aware that they were going to their deaths. When the Vatican criticized the deportation, Tiso, himself a Catholic priest before becoming president, replied, quote, there is no foreign intervention which should stop us on the road to the liberation of Slovakia from Jewry.
Can I paraphrase that?
Mm.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck Pope. Fuck God. Motherfuckers, none of that shit is real.
We're gonna kill the Jews.
Kill them all!
So, after the Soviet army liberated the country, Tiso was tried for war crimes and for destroying Slovakian democracy and sentenced to death. He was hung on April 18th, 1947. So, Jan Slata loves that guy, but you know who he didn't like? George Soros.
I wonder why.
In 1995, when Slata was trying to pass completely cool legislation designed to curtail freedom of speech and press in the Czech Republic, he accused...
Called the Figuratively Kill Jews Act.
He accused opposition of being part of a plan by George Soros to destabilize the country and foment a parliamentary coup d'etat. We could spend all day learning about the various authoritarian Nazi sympathizers and extreme right-wing xenophobes who have used Soros as their scapegoat for the last few decades. But these two are some nice examples, and I think they demonstrate my point. Since the fall of the Soviet Union, the painting of Soros as a boogeyman who's trying to take over the country has always been used by people who do not want democratic ideals in their countries. Soros has spent millions and millions of dollars trying to support the implementation of liberal democracies in countries formerly under the rule of the Soviet Union because that is where he's from and because he knows how important those democratic ideals are. And see, here's where the cruel irony
is. It's like LeBron building a school in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's exactly that.
100%.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And here's where the cruel irony of the world is. Traditional Republican foreign policy, the same party that is now under the sway of these anti-Soros narratives, you see it pop up even in Fox News. You see
right.
it pop up. The president.
Yeah.
The mainstream GOP is very close to this anti-Soros narrative now. You see, mm-hmm. you see it all over the place. But traditional Republican foreign policy is 100% in line with what Soros did in the aftermath of the Soviet Union. The GOP is historically Russophobic and generally is on the side of opening up countries to liberal democracy, which inevitably leads to an open market for the country and all that other shit that they fucking love. But because Soros is also in favor of liberal ideals like rights for all people and not hating immigrants, they've given up all principles and fallen in line with Jan Slotta and other fucking authoritarians who push propaganda.
Now, I think that is giving the GOP foreign policy a very positive spin, which it does not have.
I said traditional.
And you should not have said that either. Like, the GOP has gone out of its way.
I was trying to hide behind that.
Out of its way to prop up dictatorships everywhere. Saudi Arabia exists.
Undoubtedly.
You know, like, they don't care about democracy so much as the open markets part of what
undoubtedly,
you said.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
But that is a part of what they put forth.
Right.
As their ideals. So maybe it should be purported ideals.
Well, I suppose it is their ideal in those countries because there's already authoritarian rule and they're not playing ball. So they would just like to, if Russia was a great democracy, and they weren't playing ball, then they would try and install a military dictatorship to play ball. Mm-hmm. In the same way that when South American countries did it, installed authoritarian regimes.
Yeah.
In order to, or Iran, or, hey guys, we're great.
So I think that what we've seen so far here is a little bit of a deconstruction about how historically so much of the criticism of Soros that falls into line with the sort of things
right.
that Alex is putting forth has been the work of European authoritarians early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then as Putin has risen to power, he has consistently used Soros as a scapegoat for color revolutions.
Yeah.
Anytime that he's sort of threatened, it's a Soros thing. And in 2009, that was the prevailing place that anti-Soros criticism was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But these are fundamental shifts we're seeing take place in a relatively short period of time for Alex. I think there's no way around that. And I strongly suspect they mean something. But the only way we can tell if there's possibly something behind this, the only way to tell is that we need to analyze some of the context and see what was going on in the world in April 2009 to see if there's any clues that might tell us about why Alex might begin this all of a sudden.
Was Diamond Gusset Jeans bought out by a Russian company and then they bumped up their advertising on Alex's show on the GCN network, got a meeting with Ted Anderson, said, here's what we're going to do. We'll buy all your gold. But let you run the place and have a complete ownership stake in it.
It's very close.
As long as Alex Jones just says, I hate Soros.
It's very close. Actually, negotiations fell through for that because the Russians were trying to get Diamond Gusset to replace their theme song with the Tetris theme song.
No, you can't do that.
And it
no,
just didn't
yeah,
work out.
Yeah, that's never going to go down.
So deal went south. And
they did decide to make all their jeans, though. Mm-hmm. That is why no one knows how big or small they may be.
So relations between Russia and the United States were particularly frosty in the mid to late 2008 time span and into early 2009. There was that matter of Bush's plans to install anti-ballistic missiles in Poland and a radar station in the Czech Republic, things that Russia made very certain to make known that they saw as an act of aggression. Their ambassador to the UN, Vitaly Churkin, said that the move would result in Russia reevaluating its strategic posture and possibly to redeploying their own missiles. On the heel of that exchange of threats, Russia backed the separatists in Abkhazia and South Ossetia during the five-day war in August 2008 between the state of Georgia and what the rest of the world viewed as Russian occupying forces in the two breakaway regions.
It was a coalition of the willing, Dan.
Sure. Then, of course, on January 7th, 2009, Russia shut off all the gas flowing through Ukraine and precipitated a severe crisis of much of Europe not having gas that they needed for heating during the depths of winter. As we saw when we listened to that episode, counter to almost unanimous international consensus, Alex's position on that crisis was that Ukraine shut off the gas. There are a lot of flare-ups, and people were rightly concerned about what that would portend for the relations between the two major powers in geopolitics. On April 2nd, 2009, the G20 summit occurred in London, which marked the beginning of increased efforts to repair the strained relations between the U.S. and Russia, with talks between Obama and then-President of Russia, Medvedev. Earlier in March, Hillary Clinton had famously posed with Sergei Lavrov holding a prop reset button, intending to send the message that the two countries were putting the past behind them and moving forward.
It was an NES reset button.
That's true.
So it didn't work as well.
You had to jam it a bunch.
You had to blow on it, and that's why it wound up breaking apart almost 2 years after.
There are good reasons to think that this is possibly an effort that was being made to live in a more of a balanced world and put the Cold War mentality behind us and let it die. But that was only a public perception. In reality, the relationship between the two countries was not getting better. Part of this is due to the fact that though he was technically prime minister at the time and Medvedev was president, everyone knew that Vladimir Putin had never really stepped down from power and was really running things. He'd be president from the start of 2000 until May 2008, at which point he immediately became prime minister, serving that position until May 2012, when he once again became president. The Russian constitution doesn't allow for more than two consecutive terms for presidents, so Putin and Medvedev are engaged in what's known as a tandemocracy, where the two of them trade positions when the term limits kick in. When Putin became president again in 2012, he made Medvedev prime minister.
Dan, when he was elected president with 97% of the vote,
it was much less than that.
It was very democratic.
I think it was close to 70%, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
When Russian citizens protest this clear corruption that the state is doing, the idea that these two men are just trading positions in order to retain a stranglehold on power.
It's constitutional.
When people protest this, the state points to their protest as clear signs of things like color revolutions being carried out by internationalists like George Soros.
Somebody is fomenting these. They're paid protesters, Dan.
You bet.
It's almost like the rhetoric that a far-right authoritarian dictatorship like Russia uses in order to demonize reasonable, rational protesters has become de rigueur for far-right nationalist politicians in the United States who just so happen to go under the same banner.
It does seem that way. And what's interesting to me is like we see here this sort of historical hatred of Soros, this in 2009, in the lead up to 2009, there is very clearly a reason that Soros and Putin are at loggerheads.
Yeah.
We see the sort of tension between the United States and Russia at that time where, you know, outright antagonism or aggression would not work. There's the outward appearance of trying to make the relationship better.
Of course.
But what would work is information warfare. So the idea that Putin, since 1975, was in the KGB in the Foreign Intelligence Office, it seems like...
Specializing in propaganda.
It seems like his move would be to let Medvedev go out there and pretend to be having these, you know, let's make our relationship better talks.
Of course.
And at the same time, trying to
actively undermining those talks
through demonization of both Obama and creating this Soros narrative, because it's important to destabilize the valid criticisms of what his country is doing in the region.
Absolutely.
So I think that that's there. And I don't think it's crazy to look at that and think that there is a connection.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, again, where we need to take a step back and say, all of this stuff looks bad. There's a historical piece of it. There's a present piece of it in 2009. But none of it is to say that Russia told Alex to do this.
Of course not.
It's just so much circumstance.
And even then, even had Russia, as far as hey, let's prove it goes, even had Russia told Alex directly, they would have done it through four different shell companies, eight different people, and a video chat, I guess. Apparently, according to Alex's history. Here is my question with this. Like, watching the extent to which right-wing propaganda has utterly dominated Russia for... see it metastasize the way that it has worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And to see the way that, you know, like, it's always going to be the fact checkers are going to be on the defensive and they're never going to win. In the same way that the Russian hacking, like you can have a great cybersecurity system, but it's never going to defeat the people who are spending all of their time on the offensive, you know, like white versus black in chess.
That's like Roger Stone, always attack.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is there any, do you see a way that right-wing propaganda is actually defeated in either country or in any of these countries? Like, is there a way to win?
No.
Cool.
I like that you prefaced this by like, this is going to be a speculative question. And then, no, there's a concrete answer. No, I really don't think there is. I think you can have little wins here and there. And I think it's important to deconstruct this stuff and try and understand it. And there's a win for us and our listeners to an extent, you know, mm-hmm. like having a more robust understanding of where a lot of these ideas come from and what's really behind them, where there's truth, where there's not. But no, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I think that one of the things that is that's so effective about propaganda is it targets people where they live. It targets them in their weak spots.
Right.
That's a huge part of how the entire, I mean, of even course. Marketing is a version of propaganda.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of that discipline that's grown up from the early days of advertising and, disinformation, all of those things tied together, it's become so effective. And the people who practice it understand that in order to get a bad message across, or maybe a message that you're not inclined to believe, whether it's the Jews are evil or you need these shoes,
yeah,
you kind of have to give a secondary message that you attach to the other message.
Right, 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 right.
In order to sort of Trojan horse it into people.
Of course.
And I don't think you're ever going to be able to overcome that with reason, logic, or truth. I really don't.
Then do you realize that the conclusion to draw from that then is not we should be battling evil right-wing propaganda with reason and facts and logic, and should instead create our evil left-wing propaganda.
I think that when you see things that are called liberal propaganda, it's always things like appeals to people's rights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like on our last episode, we heard that guy from Black Pilled talking about the liberal propaganda of interracial relationships in movies.
Yes, yeah,
so
yeah.
So you hear things like that that's accused of being liberal propaganda.
Right.
I think there is probably, like, some smaller scale versions of, like, left people who use manipulative tactics in the same way as, like, Alex.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't come up with one off the top of my head. I think if they do exist, they're very unsuccessful. They don't make a difference and no one really listens to them. I don't know.
Have we considered turning ourselves into a consulting business for left-wing propaganda?
I think you've considered that on the show like 7 times at least.
I know.
Like a bunch.
But I'm really putting that out there. I'm putting that out into the... what I'd really be interested in is...
I think that's
you just trying to
fucking tie me into that. I think in terms of your consultancy business, I might be the most important piece of it.
Whoa.
Advice would just be yell at them a bunch.
Hold on. Not true at all.
Fine,
I have got years of our podcast to go back and listen to and use that.
You gotta listen back to it though, because you don't remember any of this shit.
I could, of course, just point them to the podcast, but that's not the point.
Then we wouldn't get any fees.
I suppose I'd really be interested to know if there is like a Russian analog for our podcast.
It would be way more brave than what we do.
Oh, absolutely.
For now, Alex jumps off the Soros topic and gets into a couple of things that are just kind of a little bit fun. And because we've done some of the offshoot episodes that we've done, we know now that these things are bullshit.
I want folks to know I went into this willingly. I want that on record. As an example to you, not so people down the road say, oh, man, Alex had incredible courage. Look what he did. He knew what he was doing. Because it does take this type of sacrifice, at least, you know, even having your name destroyed, to knock the barbed wire down, to go on air first and say 9/11 is an inside job and be attacked by everybody. On the morning it happened, and 2 weeks before, a month before, 2 months before.
Go ask Bill Cooper, Dick.
Nice.
So because we did that episode, now we can hear that clip, and we don't have to just say Alex is lying about this. Now we have it inside of our canon of awareness, which is fun. So go fuck yourself, Alex. In this next clip, this one is crazy. So Alex is really into still pushing the Obama deception, and he thinks that it's going to be it's the silver bullet and what have you.
Yeah. That's right. He thinks there's a silver bullet.
I appreciate that our listeners, a number of them donate, you know, $2 a month or something like that. And asking them to makes me feel gross. Listen to this next clip and listen to what Alex is asking of his audience, because this is so fucking gross.
I want you to go to InfoWars.com and scroll down the page, and right there is the Obama deception is free. as free as rain, as free as the driven snow.
And I want you to buy it for $30.
That one version of hundreds, 1,200,000 views, high quality for being free. Get it out to everybody. Don't take it for granted. Keep getting it out. Call into every talk show. Plug it. Buy the DVD and support us at InfoWars.com.
So far, okay. That is all just sort of like, yeah.
It's self-promotion. Well, it's a little bit brazen.
Sure. But as far as it's gone, I mean, the only financial thing here is, you know, buy the DVD.
Buy the DVD, even though it's free.
The rest of it is a lot of, like, help get the word out. And
yeah.
I'm not against that.
No,
but it goes
no.
off the rails so fucking hard.
Make copies aggressively. You know what it's going to do to them if you go buy a DVD duplicator. And you go buy 1,000, sell all the junk, the jet ski you don't use, whatever, out of the garage.
What?
And you sit in there every day burning hundreds of copies and putting them on cars and giving them to people. You know what's going to happen if you do that in your sector? We're going to beat these people. We're unstoppable. But you got to turn the power loose.
That's crazy. First of all, he's asking people to sell their jet skis in order to buy a DVD burner or whatever when he owns multiple boats that he's not selling in order to, hey, why don't you just give them out for free, Alex?
And then also quit your job.
It doesn't seem
move to... into your garage. Just burn DVDs day all day.
I want to say in Alex's
defense. Like a blacksmith in the 1500s.
In Alex's defense, he's not saying quit your job. It's not clear how many hours he wants them to put in a day.
That's true.
Could be a side hustle.
Could be a side hustle.
But at the same time, it's so much of an ask. That's so much to ask of people who are listening to you.
Yeah.
I understand. Go to my website, watch the film. If you like it, please tell people about it. Buy a copy. It helps support what we do. That sort of thing is like, all right, that's reasonable. Sell your jet ski!
Listen, I want every policy wonk to buy 3 million fucking thumb drives. Download every episode of our podcast onto those thumb drives and just throw them off the overpass at a fucking, on 94. I want every car to be hit with a thumb drive with all the knowledge right on it.
And while you're loading up those thumb drives, you better do it in your garage. And I will say this, if you don't have a garage, work harder. Get a building with a garage. And then you can do this. Because otherwise, you're not really a policy wonk.
See, now, here's the other thing, though. That's a little too aspirational for Alex. We're telling people to then get a job. Hey, you know what? Quit your job. Get a better job so you can afford the garage.
Yeah.
And then quit that job so you can burn our knowledge.
Get a better job so you can do what we abusively are asking you to do to support our own ambitions.
Oh, man. We're
pretty wild. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
So, at this point, Jordan... Interestingly, on this April 8th episode, Alex has a guest.
Okay.
That's a guest we've met before.
And George Soros.
A guest that we just saw reappear in 2018. It's Stuart Rhodes, the guy who started Oath Keepers.
Dan, you're not, are you aware?
Nope.
Of what's gonna happen?
Nope.
Because I'm sick of you drawing these fucking perfect parallels on a day-to-day basis.
It's part of what...
It's infuriating.
It's part of what I was talking to you before the show about how uncomfortable I am with all of this.
Like, it's really disconcerting.
I think I texted you, like, warning you that this episode's gonna be weird, and you were like, I'm fine. And I texted you back, like, I'm just trying to talk through what I'm looking at. This is very, very strange to me. So Stuart Rhodes shows back up here on the exact same day that Alex has decided to go demonize George Soros. I think that is probably a coincidence. I think that's almost certainly a coincidence. It's interesting timing, but I think that doesn't mean anything.
Right. It could be, although, a little bit more like the way I treat Chinese food, wherein if I've made a big decision, I need to work it out through my comfort food. So he's just made a big change in 2009. He's just made a big change in 2018. Maybe.
I think in 2018, you're probably right.
Or 2019, whatever it is.
Yeah, 2019. I think you're totally right in terms
still
of...
Still right in 2009 on my checks, baby.
I think that Stuart Rhodes showing up in present day is much more indicative of that. But
yeah.
In this case, I don't necessarily think so, because I don't think the two of them know each other very well. They'd only had one interview at this point.
Right.
Probably talked off air a little bit, but you can even hear from their interaction that they aren't, like, super tight in the same way that they will become.
But it could just be – you know what? Maybe that's even more important. Maybe it's like your fuck buddy, you know? You've had a long run. You just got out of a relationship. You text your fuck buddy, hey, mm-hmm. You up? And then they come on your show.
And then shit gets real weird.
And they come on your show.
Yeah. So in this interview, in this this appearance that Stuart Rhodes does, he's trying to promote the first real public meeting of the Oath Keepers that they're putting out.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're going to do is they're going to meet at Lexington and Concord, and they're going to have a big ceremony where all these police and military people reaffirm their oath to protect the United States from enemies, foreign and domestic.
Of course.
That sort of thing.
Yes.
So as they're having this conversation and Stuart is giving these plugs, Alex has a vision.
That's where he had the first shots fired in the American Revolution. That's where it all began. And so we're going to be standing there, and that's where we're going to have our first public meeting as Oath Keepers, is going to be right there.
I just had a vision. I just had a vision. I've got to stop shooting by the end of April for my new Obama film. I'm going to send a camera crew and show this event at the end of the film about this being the solution.
It's
the final solution?
It's the solution to the problems that Alex puts forth. He has now taken on the Oath Keepers as something very large. And I think that one thing that we probably maybe misascribed was the idea that Alex glommed on to the Oath Keepers. I think the Oath Keepers glommed on to him.
Yeah.
I think he made the Oath Keepers. Because they didn't really exist in any large way when Stuart made his first appearance on the show.
Yeah, that's true.
In this episode, they're having a conversation, and he says that they got tons of responses from being on Alex's show.
So this was only, so the last time he was on was only a couple of months ago.
No, maybe in our timeline, but like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago in Alex Jones' time.
All right.
Yeah, it's very recent.
So the moment Alex has the Oath Keepers founder on, the Oath Keepers at the time are pretty much nothing. Has the Oath Keepers founder on.
I mean, his website's still like a blog spot.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's
even
not...
now in 2019?
No, at this point.
Oh, in
2009.
This point. Yeah. So all of a sudden he gets a massive response from that. A lot more people want to join the Oath Keepers.
Mm-hmm.
He's staying in contact with Alex. Alex loves militias of all kinds. It's kind of a symbiotic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And I think that what Alex's vision was that this is a way to reclaim the patriot energy that is in the world right now through Glenn Beck, through the rising of the Tea Party, and mm-hmm. make it my version. My version is this version.
Yeah.
The other version is the counterfeit version, which he spells out in this next clip.
They created the fake militia so the media could then demonize it and attack it. And the ADL and Southern Poverty Law Center got caught running these groups. Mainstream news has reported on that. Elohim City. So, you know, that's the groups we're talking about. The real militia versus the counterfeit militia. Like, we're the real patriot movement. Then you've got Glenn Beck, who's definitely an operative.
Definitely an operative.
Definitely an operative.
And when Alex says that, Stuart Rhodes laughs. There's sort of a knowing, like, yeah, he is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the Oath Keepers are a part of the Tea Party. You know, they were a part of it. It wasn't separate or anything like that.
Right.
And so the idea that they're sort of scoffing at the Tea, not the whole Tea Party, but the Glenn Beck part of it.
Yeah.
It does lead one to suspect that they might have a slight external motive with it.
We'll that one's really inconclusive. I can't really step my foot down on any direction on that one.
All right, wait for like four more clips.
Okay, well, see, this is a problem with me not having all the information in advance.
I know.
God damn it, Dan.
So they're talking, Stuart Rhodes and Alex are talking, and Alex gets into what the globalists want to do, and we know that they want to kill the middle class. We know that.
Do we?
Well, from Alex's rhetoric, we know that that's what he believes. But he adds a little bit of a bow on it on this episode.
Now, they want war. These globalists, these socialists, because they socialize our wealth, these controllers, they want a Russian revolution here, folks. It's the same crew. And I'm here to tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, that they intend to march the military and the police in against the American people. They've always hated you. They've always hated your freedom.
Sake.
They want to loot the middle class and give it all to George Soros, who says he loves the crisis. He engineered the crisis. He's having the time of his life. In fact, where's that headline?
Where's that headline? Not where's that article. Where's that headline?
Dan,
that's pathetic.
Dan, can you think of somebody right now who has absolutely is continuing to try and destroy the middle class?
somebody who has engineered a crisis.
I can think of a number of
people. Somebody who is reveling in it. Somebody who is, I don't know, a Nazi collaborator. Can you think of anybody?
Familial Nazi collaborator.
Can you think of anybody
nope.
who may fit those descriptions? Somebody who may have said that we should put boots on the ground in the United States.
Maybe someone who said that, you know, like eugenics is real and he has good German blood.
Somebody
maybe,
like that. Anybody else?
Nah, I can't think of anybody.
No, nobody.
That person does not exist. And if they did, Alex would never love them.
And they would never become the president of the goddamn United States.
So what we have here is Alex. Like, that is a strong indication to me right there of Alex. I don't know how to put this other than I feel like someone told him something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This doesn't appear to be any kind of real, like, I've known about Soros forever. He is an asshole. Fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Because, like I said repeatedly already in this episode, there are ways to do that. There's ways to present that in a natural way, which is, like I said, my research team dug this up.
Yeah.
Or, hey, look, I overlooked an element. Any of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But instead, he's pitching a lot of the same narratives that he does all the time and then throwing in, like, they're trying to create this socialist state and destroy the middle class and give it to George Soros.
Yeah.
He's adding it on as an addendum, and it seems forced to
all
a certain extent.
All he needs to do is say that this is the culmination of his research up until this point.
It would
that
work.
That George Soros is this guy.
That would work.
We've always been pointing towards the Rockefellers and all of this stuff,
right.
But I have received new information that ties all of these schemes together.
Or even do the other version of it that is like, David Rockefeller is too old, and the heir apparent is Soros.
Right.
Any of those sorts of things, and now you have me sort of on the ropes.
Yeah.
I mean, I can still talk about the tradition of hating Soros and how this is still popping up out of nowhere, but it takes away a little bit of the sting of the coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because you ease it in. You ease it in with a natural, the way people present information.
Yes.
I guess, because you need a context for it. And he's doing this with no context. There is nothing. I've listened to every episode that Alex Jones has put out from late 2008 to now we're in April of 2009. Every single episode, if you consider all of that time, it's probably 500 hours of his broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say unequivocally, with no reservation, with no exaggeration or anything, that this is not, it's not normal. This is very abnormal.
Yeah.
And it can't be dealt with as anything other than that. I am certain that someone told him
something
about Soros, or be like, hey, Soros is your new target.
Yeah.
And in 2019, when he was staying up to cover Trump's speech, we heard him turn to Roger and be like, who's the new enemy?
Yeah.
So we know that that's kind of a thing that he does.
Yeah.
He kind of needs somebody to focus his energy in a certain direction.
Because he's not going to do the research.
He can't read.
He's not going to do any of it. He can't read.
In that last clip, he said,
where's the headline? Where's the headline?
Not where's the article. He's not interested in the body of the article.
Where's the information?
He's not interested in the book. He's interested in the title.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that he has. He has nothing. And this is where we get to that speculation truth line.
I suppose one of the other big factors that I'm considering with this is Soros's speech is in February 23rd.
Op-ed.
And then this is April 8th. And it seems like if there was a direct connection, that would be a long period of time.
That month?
Yeah.
Hold on to that thought.
But in 2009, it's important to remember this is 10 years ago.
True.
Like, now, that connection could have been one tweet that was sent out, and over a day, every single human being who is in these circles would have been connected to it.
That's true.
So there's far more likelihood of it being a kind of meme that took on its own powers.
Oh, sure.
In now.
That game, back then it would be a much more protracted game of telephone.
Exactly.
Like, this person talks to this person.
Right.
The sort of influence feelers going out and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Who knows? But also, in terms of the timeline, it's actually worse than you think. But hold on to that thought.
Okay.
Because
we're going to watch the movie Timeline.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Timeline.
No. So he's still talking to Stuart Rhodes. And at this point, Stuart is talking a lot of shit about this Daily Kos writer who he says is like encouraging the United States Army to blow up militia people's houses with
sounds
their children.
Sounds like Daily Kos.
It's not. I read the article. It's just talking about like how he got a really shitty email, or I think it was a comment on his blog from a guy who was in a militia about the like, hey man, you live in a different America than us. We love freedom and all this. Like, hey, and it was vaguely threatening. This comment that this writer got was very much like
being in a militia is vaguely threatening.
This guy had good syntax though, so I appreciated that.
Oh,
like he actually
him.
Was a pretty decent writer in this comment. But what he was expressing was an idea that like you're on this side, you're brainwashed, you're indoctrinated. We love freedom and all that.
Yeah.
There may come a time when you're dead because of us.
Right.
That sort of thing. And this guy, this Daily Kos writer, was talking about like, do you think for one second these assholes out there cosplaying are going to actually have any impact against the United States Army? Do you think that is possible?
Yeah.
Do you think that these dicks are going to go out there and strap explosives to themselves and run into an army base? Do you think they're going to do that? Absolutely not. Do you think that they're going to be able to pierce armor the with the weapons they
have? Yeah.
They're going to wage a war of pointlessness. And that sort of thing. That's the article that this guy wrote. Stuart Rhodes is presenting it as this guy is lusting after them killing us. And it's like, it's a classic misunderstanding that these people on the right do in terms of creating their own victimhood out of someone being like, look, you don't have a chance against the biggest army in the world.
History.
Yeah.
The world history.
It's a nonsensical struggle. So what you should direct your attention to is the places where we actually have a way to change things, which is through the democratic process.
I like us having to note that a militia member wrote a, grammatically well comment. Like
there's so many of them that aren't.
Like the next Salinger is a non-commissioned officer in a militia, like that kind of thing.
So this Daily Kos writer has written this thing that is really offensive to Stuart Rhodes.
Right.
And whatever. I think that's from reading it, I know that what he's doing is misrepresenting it. And I don't really care to go over it more than we already have. I don't want to listen to him talk for like 10 minutes about how they want to kill our children and stuff like that, because it's nonsense.
Right, but the real threat that he's getting from the Daily Kos writer, based on your characterization of what the writer said, was you're calling us cucks. My real issue with you is you're saying that we're ineffectual bullshit artists.
Nope.
And we're not capable of doing any of this.
Interestingly, that's not anywhere near Stuart's complaint. Although when the article is discussed, that is Alex's complaint.
Well, it's so Stuart's complaint too.
It's not.
No. I mean, like, psychologically.
No. He's just using it as a piece of propaganda because he knows what the author was saying and he doesn't give a fuck about that.
Okay.
But because he's talking about, like, are you willing to go to war with the United States military, knowing that if you do, they're just going to bomb your house.
Right.
With your wife inside, which was intentionally trying to draw a parallel to what the United States does in foreign countries.
Of course.
That sort of thing. There's sort of literary aspects to it in terms of what the guy at the Kos was writing. So his whole thing is just trying to create a propaganda piece out of it where it's like, they want to kill our families.
Yeah.
I don't think he's offended by the idea of them being called weak or soft. But Alex, whenever they're talking about it, that's
absolutely
the first thing
is.
That he gloms onto. And he's like, they're calling – well, I think in the article it's like, you think these bitches would be out there with bombs going to military bases and like that? And Alex immediately is like, they're calling us bitches. They're trying –
Yeah.
It is interesting that you brought that up. But it's what Alex's instinct is, not Stuart's. Stuart is, he's a military man. So
so Stuart would totally run a bomb up on somebody.
But more to the point, he's to the point and he's interested in the mission, which is creating the idea that all of these people on the left and these media figures are lusting after the idea of killing our families, which is more important to him than preserving his masculinity in some way.
Right.
That's still important to Alex. So that is actually really fascinating. I didn't intend to talk about that, but your instincts about all this world are so sharp, but they're just about Alex.
And then you say that I can't get hired as a consultant for evil left-wing propaganda?
Still think you need me.
Oh, God damn it, Dan.
I have the broad spectrum.
I'm going to admit it. I do.
Thank you.
I'll bring you on.
I need you to.
I'm going to give you a starting salary that's well below mine, though.
Don't know how to take that, but I'll accept it. Probably still better, probably better hours than this podcast. So maybe that works. So they're talking about this article, and I didn't bring this up for no reason. I brought it up because this next clip, Alex is responding to and talking about how bad this Daily Kos writer is. And what do you know? Says something about Soros.
Yeah, where are the subhuman Americans that are pro-gun and pro-freedom that built the country? Where are the subhumans that pay his George Soros paycheck that they've sucked out of our economy?
Wow. Everything goes back to Soros on this episode.
Yeah.
Literally everything.
Yeah.
So now Soros is paying Daily Kos writers. He runs Air America. He's in charge of Media Matters. He's trying to demonize Alex across the board. He's in charge of writing a bunch of stuff about the IMF and how they're going to take over everything. In this next clip, Alex just does an impression of somebody who takes Soros money, which is fun.
God, I can't wait. We're so close to getting these gun owners. We're so close to bombing their families. Oh, God, I've got foundation money and Soros money. We're butchering America. The global tax is here. We stalled the people long enough, and we're so close to turn the military and police against the people. It's going to be so good. Oh, we can't wait to destroy America. Yes. Yes. Oh, it's so good.
When I was listening to that, first of all, it's stupid. But the second thing...
That was a bad impression, by the way.
Yeah, not good.
We don't sound like Alex. Mm-mm. He just sounded like him.
What I really think that I should have had this thought before this, since we've been doing this for 2 years.
You would think.
But it was one of the first times that I realized how bad that rant would sound without the music and the pressure of an out, like the commercial out.
Oh, yeah.
Like
if there was
doing
just
that
a
voice, like,
yeah.
Without the music would be pathetic. And then without the, like, I know it's going to commercial so I don't have to say anything after it.
Yeah.
Holy shit. He'd just be lost without a map. He'd be a man at sea in a dinghy.
But we have kind of, we've touched on that before in that he's a broadcaster. Like,
yeah.
you gotta give the man credit for knowing how to hit an out, you know?
No, I know. I think that those are two sides of the same coin.
Right.
In many ways. Like, giving him his props as, like, a broadcaster is one thing. The realization is very similar that, like, man, that rant would be so pathetic without music. Like,
yeah,
he's playing to the music.
Yeah.
It's the recognizing what he brings to the table and what the music brings to the table.
Right.
It's interesting, the symbiosis of it, because, like, you hear that and it's kind of triumphant. And if you're dumb and you believe in him, it's like, oh, that's invigorating.
Yeah.
You take away that music. That rant is real weak.
Yeah.
So, Jordan, in this next clip, Alex says something, what a shock. More stuff about Soros. And this is kind of weird.
Now, you're going to see the COINTELPRO operatives and their unwitting dupes who are just conned.
Continuing to try and undermine black
Stone
people, right?
And other books and COINTELPRO articles that I've seen over the years where they're claiming... Oh, my God, the Republican Party.
Their job was to undermine black
people. Militias that want to overthrow the government and kill
not
everybody.
Not militias. White
That's
people.
George Soros propaganda.
So
George Soros propaganda.
When you read in any of these publications that come out that the right wing has militias.
That's because they have militias.
That's George Soros propaganda.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So that's an interesting position for him to take. And this is something that I can't make more clear, especially after that clip. Alex has not said any of these things in the past. When he's talked about the demonization of his weirdo patriot militia family, like, the time to talk about this was when the MIAC report came out.
He's not bringing up the MIAC report in this, is he?
No, but the MIAC report is a perfect example of him...
That's what I'm saying.
He should have brought up Soros when that came up, if it was a part of his cognizance.
Or he should bring up the Mayak report now.
I think he is spiritually on some level. I think right. I think he's implying it to the listener. The listener right. who's in the know will hear that sort of thing about the militias and stuff like that. And they'll understand what he's talking about. That's different.
Let's not give his listeners any ability to be in the know.
That's different.
First off.
But it's a different thing. Like, that is a soft appeal to the Mayak report through a attack on George Soros.
Yeah, I can see that.
The opposite is what's more important, is that when the direct attack on the Mayak report happened, there was no mention of George Soros.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a single... And that was the day when he was freaking out on air about the idea that they're demonizing the militias and the people like Ron Paul supporters and Chuck Baldwin and all these people. They're trying to say that we're all terrorists. Not a single fucking word about George Soros being involved in any of that. So this, to me, is one of the most clear-cut examples that when the Mayak report came out, which, again, is about a month from when we're talking about. Like, it's not super far connected. It seems like it because of how slowly we're going through 2000.
Right.
In our timeline.
Right.
But in Alex Jones's timeline, it's very compact. It's very close together. And when he's going through the fake avian flu narrative that he went through, when he's doing his FEMA camp rebuttal about Glenn Beck, all those things that have been in very close recent memory, not a single fucking word about George Soros. And on this episode, 50 plus mentions of him being deeply intrinsically involved with all of these evil operations. It's suspicious as fuck.
To go from no mentions to 5 mentions.
Wouldn't be that crazy.
Not crazy.
No, we'd have a very different episode.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We would talk about it.
Yeah, we would note it.
Yeah, for sure.
We would definitely say that this is a narrative. This is a narrative pivot. This is an addition.
Yeah.
And to go from zero mentions to 50 mentions is a very different thing.
And as I keep bringing up,
that is a monetary thing.
If you go from 0 to 50, there is a way to do that, but you need the ramp that takes you from 0 to 50.
Yeah.
Without it, it's just what? How are you supposed to make that jump? You can't make that jump, and that's what Alex is doing. He's trying to jump Snake River Canyon without a rocket pack and without a fucking ramp. He's trying to get over this gap of, I never talked about Soros, even though I talked about the exact same things I'm demonizing him about now, to the other side of it where we all hate Soros, right, guys?
Yeah.
And there's none of the work that needs to be done. There's none of the context. I mean this sincerely. If he had just presented this as, my guys sat down for 2 days straight, they were sitting at their laptops and they did nothing but research and they read all these documents and everything, I'd still have the same suspicion, but it would not be as glaring. This is too glaring. It's too much. It's a bridge too far for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
I want to add more to that, but you're fucking, what else is there to say? This is suspicious as fuck.
It's pretty crazy.
I don't know how better to put it.
So it gets even more suspicious when Alex reveals on this episode that not only does George Soros hate him, he also hates the Oath Keepers.
George Soros and their crowd are hopping mad because, believe me, we are the resistance. You want to know who's resisting this New World Order? You want to know who's at the tip of the spear and who's affecting change and who they're worried about?
That clip wasn't so great, but the context of it is him talking to Stuart Rhodes.
Yeah.
And talking about how, like, he's hopping mad about what we're doing. You want to know who the enemies are? They're us. That sort of thing. So, I mean, he's trying to bring Stuart Rhodes even into his, like, be in my family here with this. And that's weird because Alex wasn't doing this before. Like, when he had Stuart Rhodes on before, he wasn't talking about Soros.
Yeah.
The last interview he did with him. This is so incongruous. It's crazy.
What I would be interested in, and unfortunately this is probably a Herculean task of research that no researcher would ever be able to do. I can't think of any researcher who would have the ability to kind of go through just all of the right-wing information around this time period and see where Soros popped up in most of these places. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, at this point in time,
I tried to find a lot of that, and it's not, there's not much. there was the predating Bill O'Reilly report. I believe it was 2007 when he did a report about George Soros being super evil. But it seemed like such a out of left field kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, it just seemed like and he doubled back on it.
It was a bit of a one-off.
Yeah. It didn't hold water.
It didn't catch.
No. And I don't know what to make of that, because I think that there's a possibility that that was an opening salvo of some sort or a trial run or soft launch.
Yeah.
I think it's possible that that's what it is, or it's just Bill needed a story and he just came up with something. One of his writers came up. It's impossible for me to really sort out what Bill O'Reilly was doing in 2007.
It's weird. That's actually when Bob Odenkirk was writing for Bill O'Reilly, and he wrote the Soros sketch.
It was a parody.
It was a great sketch.
Yeah.
This was before he and David Cross had, or no, this would have been way after.
A little bit. Back when Bill O'Reilly and Bob Odenkirk were at M-Bar doing their two-man act. Oh, I'm sorry. That was Dennis Miller.
The Thrilling Adventure Hour had just started.
So I don't know what to make of that part of it. And it is interesting because, like, that is a question that I tried to wrestle with as I was doing the research for this episode.
Of course.
Because it would be really easy and very convenient for us to find a something in April like from the Drudge Report or something like that. They would be like, oh, this is where Alex is getting it from.
Yeah.
This is... Because then we wouldn't have to have the larger conversation about it, or we would have to have the conversation of where the source got it from.
Or, more importantly, if there was a barrage of shit around this time. If there was
a
concerted
chance.
Media effort
Absolutely
around this
not.
Time, that's a whole different story.
Absolutely not.
Exactly.
And, like I said, the only antecedent I can think of was... Bill O'Reilly in 2007.
Yeah.
And that was just a weird fucking show that he did. And it was a one-off, and he didn't follow up on it at all, left it alone. And then you get to, like, what was it, 2011, when Glenn Beck did his disgraceful Soros the Puppet Master thing that we covered?
Yeah.
And at that point, Alex is like, Soros isn't the Puppet Master. He's just a middle management guy.
Yeah.
So he's doubled back on it by that point, which makes this even more suspicious.
This is weird.
It's very weird.
This is weird.
It's very weird.
I don't like it.
So in this next clip, Alex explains that all criticism of him basically probably is just COINTELPRO.
Of course.
That's why we have Republicans and Democrats. You have Glenn Beck saying the FEMA camps aren't real. We're all kooks, you know, arrest Ron Paul supporters, but then he's still our best friend. You've got all the big liberal sites doing it. And their own members are posting, the majority of comments are countering them, going, no, Alex Jones is good. You know, he calls for nonviolence. As they go, Jones says kill cops. This isn't going to work. And anybody you hear putting that out as an operative, folks, you want to know instantly who an operative is. That's how you know.
So he's essentially ascribing, like, most criticism of him, because he's misrepresenting and misunderstanding the criticism of him that does exist. So he's just saying that, like, hey, if you hear bad shit about me, it's probably an operative, which I think is a cowardly way to go about it. I would say that
you might as well just say, if you hear bad information about me, they're a suppressive person.
Yeah. Like, so anyway, we have one more clip left here from April 8th, and this clip is interesting. It's Stuart Rhodes trying to pimp the Tea Party, and then Alex Jones says something fucked up.
I recommend that people find out about the Tea Party nearest to them. There's going to be 150. I've seen that number up to 1,000 different cities in the
United
States.
And we use that. I'm sorry, I always interrupt. We use that to go out and educate and, quote, radicalize the people that are there to the full spectrum. Go ahead.
So he's doing that, quote, radicalized to sort of make fun of the idea of, like, that's what the SPLC says we're doing.
Yeah. But it's literally what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, hey, there's these people who are, you know, weirdo libertarian conservative types who are gravitating towards this anti-tax Tea Party thing. We go out there. That is our opportunity for a captive audience that we're going to fucking radicalize.
Yeah.
I know he's doing that to mock the mainstream media or whatever, but he knows that that's exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's like an ISIS recruiter being like, okay, so we're going to turn you into a terrorist, and then you're going to go to, like, you can put it within scare quotes all you want, but
right,
that's
right.
what you're doing, so it doesn't matter how you say it.
Yep, to some extent. And the proof of the pudding is in the eating, because that is what Don't, happened.
Do, we're not doing this again.
So, Jordan, at this point, the show kind of ends. He has a interview with this guy named Michael Badnarik. That's how Alex pronounces it. His name is actually Michael Badnarik, if you want to spell it correctly. It took me for fucking ever to find him on YouTube. Or on the internet at all.
He says Bagnarik instead of Badnarik.
I'm like, oh God, I can't find this guy. You're like, how does he have no internet footprint? It's Badnarik, B-A-D-Narik. You can figure that out.
Oh, Google didn't show you the, here's what we thought you were searching for results, because
certainly
that guy is not fucking there. Yeah.
He's not relevant.
Gotcha.
He's a guy who teaches constitution classes. Non-accredited. And I don't know. I don't give a fuck about this guy. He ran for president on the Libertarian ticket.
Good for him. How did he do?
Not great. Now, Jordan, I should tell you, I lied to you. I'm sorry about that. But the structure of this episode demanded it.
This is not the last clip from April 8th.
It's the last clip from April 8th, but I lied to you about nothing important happening on April 7th.
You son of a bitch. What are you? Did you just fucking inception us?
No, I didn't. It's just how the narrative must go and how how the playing out of this information must go. Because if I told you what I'm about to tell you at the beginning of this episode, it wouldn't really matter. But now... It really, really does.
Sometimes it concerns me that you sound like a benevolent race from a Doctor Who episode where you're like, you guys weren't ready for this information yet, and now we have brought you to the point where you can handle it.
It's just the, you know, this is the idea of like, I'm not trying to tell you a dishonest story, but I'm trying to explain what's going on between these 2 days. And yes, April 7th was really fucking boring. Really boring. And the part that I'm about to play you also kind of bored me until April 8th happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then this part of April 7th took on a new meaning.
Okay.
But first I want to play part of this 10-minute interview Russia Today did with me. The rest is up
God
on Infowars.com. I think one of the fairest interviews that I've ever done. They just asked the questions and let me answer them and didn't even really edit it. Just amazing to see that going on.
One of the fairest interviews he's ever done. And before I say anything more, I want to make clear about one thing. I don't think that the mere fact of appearing on RT means anything. I don't think that all anchors or guests there are Putin stooges. That's nonsense and an expression of a deeply simplistic and Russophobic mindset. I don't believe that. I absolutely don't believe that. I think there are people who believe that, and they think that they aren't engaging with reality. And I want to make that abundantly clear. That being said, the network is state-owned. So this interview, Alex says, is the most good, like it's the best interview he's ever done.
The fairest interview.
Fairest interview he's ever done. So this is on the April 7th episode, the day before he launches his Soros offensive.
I don't understand.
This interview was aired on RT on April 6th.
No idea.
So there is an interesting thing here where
I don't know what connection you're trying to draw here, because I don't see any.
Right now, I'm not trying to draw anything other than coincidental connections.
I know.
So here is where the interview starts. Alex starts.
Oh, we're listening to the RT interview too.
Well, we're going to listen to what Alex plays of it.
Oh, okay.
But I'll also say that what he plays of it is strongly indicative of the whole interview is.
Gotcha.
He's not misrepresenting that interview at all. I watched the entire thing. I was thinking about
completely out of character.
I was thinking about pulling clips from it, and I actually did record all of it in preparation to pull clips from it.
Yeah.
But then when I listened back to what Alex plays, I'm like, oh no, that's pretty much all of your points. So we can listen to Alex's introduction of it. We can hear the clips from his show. And trust me, it's indicative. So here he starts. We'll see what he says.
Okay, let's go ahead and go to this Russia Today piece, because a lot of folks are watching at PrisonPlanet.tv or want to hear the audio as the radio listeners. So we'll go ahead and play that for everybody. And I think I succinctly, in 10 minutes, boil things down very simply to the world audience. Here it is.
RT is in Austin, Texas, catching up with radio talk show host and documentary filmmaker Alex Jones. Alex, thanks for sitting down with us today. My first question is, several months after Obama stepped in as president of the United States, you make a documentary calling him a deceiver. Why?
He said he wouldn't hire lobbyists. All he's done is hire high-powered lobbyists at every level of government. And he's handed the country over to the oligarchs, the international bankers.
That's just Alex Jones repeating narratives from the Obama deception.
Right.
The idea that he has lobbyists all over the place. We talked about the lobbyists that he individually points out, and many of them aren't lobbyists. There are just people who he has deemed lobbyists.
Some of them were lobbyists, which I believe we were fair about.
Yeah. Some of them, yeah. But not all.
No.
Like the idea that he's infesting, things with the lobbyists. It's not good. Right. The interviewer asks, he's a deceiver. Why? Mm. And the reason that he gives is a rehashing of the Obama deception narratives about this. That's not good to start out with. In this next clip from that interview, he basically denounces our government.
And what you say is that the American government is a puppet of the New World Order. Is that right?
Absolutely. I am a patriot. I believe in the free market. I believe in the red, white, and blue Constitution, Bill of Rights. And everything that the supposed government is doing is the opposite of that.
Okay, cool. So now in this next clip, the interviewer started by saying that you call Obama a deceiver. And in this next clip, Alex literally says that Obama is a deceiver.
There's just one thing that I really want to point out that I really want everybody to be clear on. And I think everybody kind of knows, but it's like, those people who say they're into the Constitution always say Constitution and Bill of Rights and really never talk about any of them other amendments past that.
No, because
they really don't like those amendments.
Everything past the Civil War is all bullshit.
They really don't like those amendments.
Well, it's the same thing with those weird, like, sycophantists. Those people who believe that, like, Pope Pius the... Everybody since then has been Vatican II.
Yeah.
Those
are fun, though. I like those guys.
But it's the same sort of mentality of the everything past the 10th Amendment has been bullshit. Or whatever.
Right. Most of them think everything past the Second Amendment and none of the Constitution is,
Right. So anyway, in this next clip, Alex actually calls Obama a deceiver.
Right.
How do you see Barack Obama as American president?
President Barack Obama is a deceiver. He says one thing and then he does the opposite. And that's the only thing that is constant with Barack Obama. He bills himself as anti-establishment, but really he is completely owned and paid for by the establishment.
Here's the next clip.
So how do you see the future of American politics?
The United States is a corrupt empire that has been used by international banks and the global crime syndicate to expand their empire worldwide.
Okay.
All right.
That seems like something that Russia would be super interested in hearing, based on the fact that they are going into Georgia, going into Ukraine, and the United States is one of the people who are like, hold on now. So we have one more clip from this interview with RT where Alex lists off his enemies. This interview came out on April 6th, 2009, 2 days before the episode that we're listening
to. Oh, no. He's going to talk about his enemies on April 6th, 2009, 2 days before the episode we listened to. Dan, if I was going to make a prediction based upon the ominous way with which you introduced this clip, I would guess what? No mention of George Soros.
You allege that the Bilderberg Group runs the world. Who are they exactly?
The Bilderberg Group is the Queen of England, the Queen of the Netherlands. It is the Rockefellers. It is the Rothschilds. They write books. They brag about it. David Rockefeller wrote a book 4 years ago saying he wants world government and end of U.S. sovereignty. And they are these incredibly wealthy, powerful families that play with nations and whole populations like their little toy.
No mention of Soros. Not a single mention of Soros. It's weird. It was 2 days earlier.
Just 2 days earlier.
2 days earlier.
Now, this is while he was talking to RT. So you would suspect that he had an open line of communication with a state-run Russian media outlet.
I want to talk to you about this interview because I have a lot of feelings about it.
Yeah.
This interview is very interesting for a number of reasons. For one, the things that Alex is saying here are super not out of the norm for things he normally says. he's not way outside of his rhetoric. But at the same time, this rhetoric takes on a decidedly different feel when it's being presented on the state media channel for a fairly hostile foreign power. When Alex says that Obama is a deceiver, it's not saying that he's a liar. That's saying that Russia is right not to trust the proposed reset in the talks between Obama and Medvedev. When Alex says that the U.S. is a corrupt empire, it's not saying that our system is bad. It's saying that Russia is right to encroach on their neighbors in Georgia and Ukraine and fucking don't care about what's going on in Syria, and that the U.S.'s response is simply an expression of the corruption of the empire.
Yeah.
It takes on a very different feel in that context. But all that is good and well. But what really interests me about this interview is who is interviewing Alex. The interview is being done by a woman named Anastasia Cherkina, who is a prominent journalist at RT for a while. However, in addition to being a reporter, she's also the daughter of Vitaly Cherkin. You may remember him from earlier as Russia's ambassador to the UN, who was saying that Russia would deploy their missiles if the U.S. put their radar station in the Czech Republic.
Ha!
Weird. Cherkin had been a prominent member of Russia's foreign relations team and the permanent representative of Russia at the UN since April 2006. And in his time there, he's most known for being quick with the wit and even quicker to veto UN resolutions that went counter to Russia's interests. In the time span that he was at the UN, he was the one to veto 13 resolutions, many of which were about human rights abuses in Syria, a few others about Georgia and Ukraine. In the same time frame, the U.S. vetoed 3 resolutions. Before becoming Russia's main man at the UN, Vitaly Cherkin had a storied resume. Having risen up from the U.S. desk at the USSR Foreign Ministry in the late 70s to becoming the ambassador to Belgium and Canada in the early to late 90s and early 2000s. My point here is that Vitaly Cherkin is a big player in Russian international politics and foreign relations, and it seems like a stretch of credulity to imagine that Alex wouldn't know who he is, given the fact that Cherkin was a naysayer within the body that Alex hates the most, the United Nations. I find it very unlikely that he wouldn't know that he was being interviewed by such a high-ranking international relations figure's daughter. I don't think that's possible. The only way that it's not possible is that Alex has no idea about the worlds he pretends to know about, which I accept is possible.
Let's pump the brakes on that one real quick. I respect that. I respect that. At the best, I'm going to give you a 50-50 yay or nay on that one.
I don't know. Now, you might also remember Vitaly Cherkin as one of the prominent Russian officials who died under slightly suspicious circumstances in the months after the 2016 election. I have no idea if he really died of a heart attack, as many of the media people have suggested, or if it was a political murder. There is a very strong possibility that coincidence was involved. You know,
or just death.
No, like, that's what I'm
saying.
Coincidence is just random death.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anybody could die at any time. No, that's totally fine. And it's not like he was, it's not like he was 35, you know?
No, he was in 60. It was the day before his birthday. Look, I don't want to talk about this too much because I think there are parts of this that are fucking stupid.
Yeah.
There were these 9 people who died in the 9 months after the election.
Right.
And they were all high-ranking, to some extent, diplomatic people in the Kremlin.
No, I remember that, because Arby's had that 9 for 9 sandwich special in honor of that.
Yes.
I remember that.
You get the Vitaly roast beef. Delicious. Horsey sauce. I don't like the conspiracies that go around about this, like trying to tie them all together, in the same way that I don't like the conspiracies that Mike Adams and Alex pitch about the idea of, like, all of these people who are, like, trying to give you natural health cures end up dying.
Yeah.
All that can be a coincidence. Like, these aren't young people. These are people also in probably high-stress careers. There's no reason to think that all of them are in any way connected. It's just suspicious, and it doesn't prove anything. And similarly, it doesn't necessarily mean anything that Alex Jones is being interviewed by this guy's daughter. It's entirely possible it's all just a coincidence. So, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you at the end of this. I sincerely don't. I don't think that we've proved anything, but at the same time, I think we proved a lot.
It's
That analogy, it is a million arrows pointing to Bugs Bunny's hole.
Yep.
You cannot prove Bugs Bunny's down there.
Nope.
But God damn it if there aren't a lot of arrows.
Yep. And the circumstance of this stuff really bothers me. It really bothers me.
Yeah.
If only because it's happening now. And I always wish it happens later. You know, like,
yeah.
I always wish revelations happen later because then I'll have more time to prepare for them. You're like,
that's not how revelations work.
No, and you got to deal with it. But I wish that the Soros pivot happened, you know, I don't know, 2 months in Alex's narrative from now.
Yeah.
Because then I wouldn't be blindsided by it. I was really blindsided by this.
Yeah, of course.
And I don't want to talk about it.
We were having a whole different conversation in 2009 than we were in 2018.
We had that whole fun.
And now it seems like we're having the same fucking conversation 10 years later.
I know. It is weird. And we had that whole fun about how Alex was stupid about the FEMA camp stuff.
He was,
that
so,
was
so stupid
fun
about
in
the
2009.
FEMA camp stuff. That
I thought
great.
We could keep that going for a while, but it turns out
it would have been a great ride.
Is introduced almost immediately after that. I want to end this, but
yes.
I'm very self-conscious, and I'm very conflicted about a lot of this stuff.
This is so frustrating.
It is.
It's so frustrating.
It's hard to make sense of all of it.
I want to have a take, Dan. I want to be a Connor Friedersdorf and have
too.
A take on this.
I think.
I want to say that you know, the Guardian is right about all kinds of shit, but.
I think the only take we can really strongly have is that Alex is fucking wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We can hard take that.
Hard take.
But, yeah.
Boiling same, that take is.
At the same time, it's unrewarding to me on some level that for all these months, we've been waiting for him to talk about Soros.
Yeah.
And he does. And it's also, coincidentally, around a very specific hotspot in Russo-American relations.
Yeah.
And he was interviewed by RT 2 days prior.
Yeah.
And a month before, Soros did an interview about how, like, we need to have a dual-pronged attack at Russia's interests. And we still can't say anything definitive. It really bums me out. But it is the path of honesty. So I'm okay with that. Anyway, Jordan.
Oh, boy, Dan.
Jordan, I don't know what to tell you, but we'll be back. We'll be back on our next episode.
Indeed we will.
Which I hope will be more lighthearted than this. And I don't like this. I don't fucking like this.
You hate not knowing, though. This is an infuriating thing for you.
It's not even that. It's not even
because
that.
Because it's an impossible thing to know.
Well, yeah.
Or at the very least, it's a thing that in order for you to know would require context at the
or
level
me pretending I know things like Alex does.
Oh God, I wish we could pretend to
yeah,
know
that'd
things.
Be nice.
Ooh, but if you are hiring a left-wing propaganda consultant, we will pretend to know that Alex Jones is being hired.
Or
by
if you're somebody who pretends to know things, we will pay you nothing to tell us things. It's partially that, and then partially also like the last episode we did on Friday, that was fucking heavy.
Yeah.
That was heavy.
Yeah.
And I wanted kind of an episode off.
Yeah.
And
no, you came
back
even
to
heavier.
A 2009, and I'm like, God damn it. Damn it. And I'm a human. I would like a walk in the park. I would like a.
Yeah.
We're doing this show, and oftentimes it's various degrees of difficult to get through. You know, for context and
that's
historical
actually,
reasons.
That's actually the blurb we have on our description on iTunes. When you read
it's hard to get through.
Knowledge Fight. It's hard to get through.
It's variably hard to get through. Yeah. But I would love, for the last episode when we were talking about Alex's like real acceptance of authoritarianism. I would love for the next episode to be just something we can dance on his face.
Yeah.
And like, oh, look at this goofy bullshit.
Yeah, of
and
course.
Unfortunately, it turns out that the next day in the chronology is this. And
here's what I'm excited about. What if, all right, this is my great excitement.
All right.
What if we're living in some kind of Philip K. Dick story, which I assume you would love desperately.
Depends on the story.
All right. So Alex, in 2019 is living in an actual parallel universe to Alex in 2009. So we have a direct
10-year difference. So every 2019 episode we do has a direct parallel to a 2009 episode that we do, wherein he lives up in the... Look, this could be huge.
Are you saying that Alex is the bigot in the high castle? Shut it down. That is two, Dan. Guys, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate everybody so much. This has been a very difficult episode for me to prepare, but we'll be back, our next episode. But until then, we got a website.
Do we have a website?
I've heard we do.
It's called thebigotinthehighcastle.com.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, it's knowledgetrite.com.
I gotta get that URL.
Oh, we gotta get that new.
I've gotta get Flow My Tears. The policeman said,
"No, no,
go home and tell your mother you're brilliant."
Nope.
.com.
I think that one might be open.
Go home and tell your mother you're Ubik.
We're on Twitter. It's @knowledge_fight.
That's correct. We're on Facebook.
We got a group called Go Home and Tell Your Mother You're Not a Bigot.
We're also on the exegesis of iTunes. You did this. You did this. You brought up Philip K. Dick.
It's my fault. It's my fault. You can download our podcast, subscribe, leave a review,
please
or
do.
Leave an Eldritch review. Those are
That's more Lovecraft,
man. I get it.
Listen, I don't
want
to do
this
anymore.
There we go. Here we go. We got to run. Close it out.
I don't want to do this
Close
anymore.
It out.
I don't think Philip K. Dick killed anybody. I don't think he did. He probably led people down some bad roads. He probably... got some, like, young women into heroin, and I'm not thrilled with that. They probably died as a result of that, and I'm not thrilled with that.
This
but
is heavy.
He didn't kill anybody. But one guy technically probably did, and we got to end this episode, and that guy is Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.